and Ramsey and Santos wouldn't take "everything is fine" for an answer. They had to see Saxon for themselves.
"Seriously, warriors?"
Saxon grunted as he glared at each of his brothers in turn.
"Lose the attitude,"
Ramsey grumbled, trying to sound authoritative and hard.
"Where's the girl?"
"Woman,"
Saxon corrected.
"And she's sitting inside on a bar stool, all alone at the kitchen island, waiting for me to get back inside, to join her."
Santos craned his neck, trying to peek over Saxon's shoulder.
"No,"
Saxon warned him.
"Not happening, Santos. You can meet her some other time. What the heck is up with you guys?"
Ramsey stroked his chin, worrying his two-day-old stubble, as he tried to play it off.
You need to follow up with Julian, about the Vosu job. We figured we would just check in, get our own short debriefing.
He shifted his eyes guiltily.
How'd everything go with Anthony Beckman and Julia Schaffer, anyhow? What happened with Nathaniel's guy?
They're dead,
Saxon said brusquely.
Is that brief enough?
Ramsey ignored the sarcasm.
So that's the entire job, right? All of the Vosu stalkers have been handled, and Rebecca can get on with her life.
Saxon stared blankly at his fraternal twin. Ramsey O'Laru was a lot of things, but keeper of the house, carrier of messages, and one to follow up on another male's destiny, Rebecca Lacusta's state of mind, nah, he wasn't any of those things.
Ramsey, Julian doesn't need anything else on his plate,
the ruthless warrior explained.
Ramsey!
The vampire flinched, his GQ good looks giving way to a hardened expression.
What? You came all the way across the valley to Southern Dark Moon Vale, at 3:30 in the morning no less, to ask me about Julian's list, to ask me if Nathaniel and I handled our business. Oh, and by the way, I already checked in with Julian, so this has nothing to do with the tracker. Care to try again?
Ramsey snorted, crossed his arms over his burly chest, and pretended to stare at a crack in a rock. And then he finally shrugged.
You couldn't find her, little brother.
Little brother? Saxon frowned.
We were born 5 minutes apart, Ramsey. Come again? It took you almost an hour to find your destiny,
Santos tried to explain. Saxon furrowed his brow.
To find Kyla?
Ramsey nodded emphatically, and Saxon finally got it. His brothers were wired for sound, still walking on a razor-fine edge as a result of Saxon's blood moon. A missing destiny was nothing to shrug off lightly, and he had given them both quite a scare. He smiled wryly and shook his head.
Oh,
he teased, softening his voice.
You were worried about me, weren't you?
Santos shrugged, admitting guilt, and Ramsey nearly snarled.
We were just making sure you both made it back home safely.
Saxon suppressed laughter and casually extended his arms.
Group hug?
He offered. Santos chuckled in a light-hearted rejoinder, while Ramsey shot him a warning glance.
Hug me and I'll break both your arms.
Saxon placed a firm hand on Ramsey's shoulder.
Big brother, I'm fine.
Two pairs of identical hazel eyes met, locked in the moment, and Saxon repeated the refrain.
I'm fine.
Ramsey nodded, at last taking a breath, and Saxon removed his hand.
How are things going?
Santos finally asked. Saxon raised one shoulder in a casual lift.
Great,
he said nonchalantly.
So far, so good.
Really? Santos asked, sounding surprised.
Yeah?
Saxon reiterated.
In fact,
he paused.
Maybe so far too good.
He glanced away.
I don't know. This isn't supposed to be that easy. I guess the jury is still out. I'll have to let you know more later. What's wrong?
Ramsey asked bluntly. Saxon shook his head.
That's just it. Nothing is wrong so far. In fact, she came back without compulsion.
Santos flashed a playful smile.
Yeah, well, you are the ladies' man.
Saxon shrugged again.
Maybe.
He drew inward, thinking it over, and Ramsay caught his hesitation.
"What aren't you saying?"
the master warrior asked. Saxon shook his head.
"I honestly don't know. She's smart, she's beautiful, and she's very easy to get along with. And yet, there's something."
"Something what?"
Ramsay prompted.
"I don't know. Something missing on my end."
His twin cocked his brows in question.
"Like?"
Saxon felt miserably guilty.
"Like, I thought I would be instantly attracted to the female the gods prepared."
His voice dropped to a mere whisper. He definitely did not want Kyla to overhear their conversation. Not that she could.
"I expected more electricity on my part. I even kissed her earlier. And well, how should I put this? My interest mounted for sure. But nature wasn't rising, if you know what I mean. Not my typical response to a beautiful, sexy woman."
Ramsay frowned.
"Way too much information, Saxon."
An awkward silence lingered, then,
"Look, if it's any consolation, when I first found out that Tiffany was my destiny, when she took off on that huge damned horse, all I wanted to do was wring her pretty neck."
He snickered at the memory.
"Yeah, but you wanted her, right?"
Saxon asked.
"I mean, you wanted her, correct?"
Ramsay reached into his jacket pocket, retrieved a small silver case, and stuffed a toothpick between his lips.
"These things take time, Saxon."
Saxon nodded. He was sure his twin was right. And beyond that, just what the hell was wrong with him? Kyla Sparrow was less than 50 feet away, waiting inside his clifftop retreat with absolute trust and sincerity in her heart. She was open, responsive, and finally here. He must have been more on edge than his brothers. Maybe that delay in finding her, that tentative hour, had actually taken a toll. He glanced up at the sky, regarded his own blood moon, and grew inwardly quiet. After 701 years, the gods had finally smiled upon Saxon, and he wasn't going to screw this up.
"It's late, warriors," he said with a wink and a smile. "And my destiny is waiting. You need to take your asses home."
Kyla Sparrow locked the bathroom door, turned on the exhaust fan, and ran the water to drown out the sound of her texting. Who knew what a vampire could hear if he was really listening? As it stood, someone had come to the front door. At 3:30 in the morning? And Saxon had stepped outside. This might be her only opportunity.
"Owen, what's up? I'm in Darkmoon Vale. So far, everything's going perfect."
She tapped her foot on the natural stone tile and waited, praying Owen would reply quickly.
"Be careful texting,"
Owen shot back, her screen lighting up with a dim yellow glow.
"Of course,"
she replied.
"Any news from the headhunter? Any more specific orders?"
She started to type "What happened to Kiera?" and quickly hit the backspace button, erasing the previous line. No way, no how. She wasn't going to go there. She was doing what she must, and she had to keep her focus on Saxon.
"Yeah," Owen texted back. "I spoke with XM. He approves of everything we've done so far. But he wants you to lie low for a while. Do not go after the kill, not with the vampire who took you. The HH has his own targets, a personal vendetta, I guess. An ancient named Kitaro, two warriors named Marquise and Nathaniel, a wizard named Nakari, and a healer they call Kagan. That's all I know so far. The boss doesn't think you can get to any of them, but you might be able to get to their kids. Strike where it really hurts."
Kyla frowned. Xavier Matista, the mysterious head of all the Midwest region and all their various sub-militias, wanted her to try to infiltrate the House of Jaden on a much deeper level? To somehow take out one or more of the vampire's sons? That would be a suicide mission at best. She shivered. He was planning to sacrifice her life, wasn't he? She started to text something back when three words shot across her screen.
"What's his name?"
"Huh?"
she fired back. The man who took you, his name.
Saxon.
She pressed send.
Olaru.
She pressed send again. Got it, Owen replied. I'll run the name by Xavier. In the meantime, be careful, and erase this shit, Kyla. Zero room for error.
Yeah,
she replied swiftly.
Tell me about it.
She typed TTYL and quickly followed up, erasing all the sent and received messages. Then she powered down her phone. Tap, tap, tap. Three knocks on the bathroom door.
You okay?
Saxon's deep, alluring voice reverberated through the panel.
I'm fine.
Kyla gulped, stuffing the phone in her pocket. Holy shit. She was dancing with the devil. Just one small slip and she would surely burn in hell. She splashed cold water over her face, took a long, slow, deep breath, and opened the bathroom door.
5.
Saxon Olaru wasn't usually impulsive, and he knew he needed to give this time, take a moment to get to know his new destiny, slowly bring her into his life. After all, she was ready, willing, and cooperative. There was no need to sequester her cell phone. What might she text? I met a hottie and he took me home? There was no need to restrict her explorations. It wasn't like she was trying to escape. And there was no need to propel things forward any faster than necessary. Kyla was like putty in his hands. At least, thus far. Besides, it was late, he was tired, and they still had 29 days, being that he'd met her before midnight on Sunday, and it was now 4 o'clock on Monday morning. There was no need to rush. Just the same, he had waited a dozen human lifetimes for this woman to appear, and now that he had her, safely tucked away in his home, he wasn't feeling anything particularly amorous. However, there was one thing that might change that, something that was sure to stir his soul, something that always had. And if sharing it with Kyla now meant that he might be forced to tell her the truth, about his species, about his purpose, about her importance to the race, then so be it. Wasn't the truth always the best bet anyhow? Besides, it might put his mind at ease to get the ball rolling early. So far, she was so agreeable. Saxon had no doubt that the real truth, the whole truth and nothing but, would surely give Kyla pause, and then maybe they could start to move forward on a more authentic level, peel through the layers together.
Is everything all right?
He asked again, watching as she sauntered out of the bathroom and flashed him a breathtaking smile.
Yes,
she spoke softly.
Everything is fine. Who was at the door?
He shrugged a dismissive shoulder.
Oh, that was just my brothers.
Searching for a plausible explanation, he added,
Earlier in Denver, I was there on business. We were just wrapping things up.
She frowned, albeit slightly.
Business? What kind of business so late at night?
He gave her an evasive wink and followed it up with an ingratiating nod. Then he pointed toward the great room.
Nothing important or remotely interesting. Come. There's something I want to show you.
She paused as if considering whether she was going to let him dismiss the subject so easily, and then simply let it go. Once again, she was so compliant and agreeable. She followed him down the hall, across the stunning main living space, and to the back of the room where he opened a gigantic set of modern sliding doors.
It's outside,
he explained. He took off his lightweight jacket, draped it over her shoulders, and led her out the doors, onto the sprawling wraparound terrace, then down a curving set of cliffside steps leading down to his secret garden.
Don't worry,
he reassured her, gesturing toward the edge of the cliff and the accompanying panoramic view.
No one has ever fallen, and I'd never let you slip.
She smiled sweetly.
No worries. Besides, I'm not afraid of heights.
She immediately switched to a more demure posture, almost as if on purpose.
But I appreciate the gallantry, Saxon. Thank you.
He offered Kyla his hand, escorted her down the steep, foreboding staircase, and led her to the elaborate Tuscan-inspired gardens to the entrance of an enormous greenhouse, with a retractable dome-shaped roof and 3 acres of meticulously planted flowers. Roses, to be exact. He paused, needing to gather his courage. wanting to catch his breath. This was no small thing for Saxon. This was not an insignificant moment. The Sentinel had dreamed of this for years. Hell, for decades, even centuries. He had traveled the world from one end to the next, collecting the rarest, most elegant plants, roses in every color of the rainbow and beyond, fragrances so sweet, petals so delicate, blossoms so fragile and unique that a single collection housing them all could not be found anywhere else on Earth, not even in the most famous botanical gardens. Every trellis, every bench, every handcrafted fountain had been chosen for its artistry and grace, and each sat peaceful and undisturbed in Saxon's secret oasis. This was the master warrior's private pride and joy, the labor of a lifetime. It exemplified the full measure of his immortal heart and all his hopes and dreams. This virtual glassed-in sanctuary of flora, this hidden paradise of splendor, this masterpiece of elegance and design, created over an era for his destiny, for the day she finally showed up. If their souls were truly linked, and of course they inevitably were, Kyla would have to feel something magical while standing in this place. And so would Saxon. Kyla Sparrow stood quietly behind Saxon as he opened a magnificent glass-encased door to what looked like a greenhouse built on his estate. She had no idea what he was about to show her, or why, but she knew it was significant. It was written all over his face, betrayed in his subtle body language, dripping from his pores. This place was somehow special, incredibly important, to him and ostensibly to her. Well, to Kiera, if she had been there, to Saxon's true destiny, and Kyla needed to play it off.
"Are you ready?"
he drawled in that sexy masculine voice, and Kyla slowly nodded her head.
"I love surprises,"
she whispered, lying through her teeth. He nodded, stood back in the doorway, and ushered her in with his hand. The first thing that caught her attention, no, the first thing that greeted her senses, was the plethora of aromas rising from the enclosure, the soft and sweet mixture of a dozen extravagant scents. Saxon wasted no time strolling down the center aisle in front of her. He reached to touch a pale, purple and white bloom, with petals as delicate as fine paper. It was a rare and exquisite rose, and his forefinger caressed the underside of a petal with obvious, genuine affection.
"This is Lysianthus. You can also find it in blue, violet, lavender, or white. But it doesn't live very long once you clip it from the stem. Extremely expensive to ship."
Before she could reply, he took a few steps forward and fingered another set of blossoms, the deepest crimson-red petals Kyla had ever seen.
"This rare beauty can only be found in Halfidi, Turkey, nowhere else on Earth. It's fed by the river Euphrates and must be watered with the same. While it's a stunning crimson color right now, you should see it in the summer."
His soft hazel eyes alighted with golden specks of wonder.
"In the summer, it's a deep velvet black."
Kyla inhaled sharply, staring at the rose.
"Black?"
He nodded, seeming pleased.
"Yep, it'll take your breath away. The natives of the small village where it grows believe the flower represents both passion and death and foreboding, depending on its shade."
He shrugged, a casual dismissive gesture.
"But I just think it's beautiful, no matter what the shade."
He stepped back and smiled.
"Would you like to smell it?"
Kyla nodded enthusiastically, padded toward the rose and took a long, slow sniff of the crimson petals.
"Wow,"
she uttered, hoping it was the correct response. Then she straightened her back, glanced forward at the rest of the greenhouse, and let her jaw grow slack.
This is amazing and enormous. How many acres? Are all the flowers roses?"
Her comment definitely seemed to please him. His expression brightened, and his voice grew thick with admiration.
"It's a few acres, and yes, they are."
He pointed toward the back of the greenhouse, though the flowers were too far away for Kyla to see.
"Pink and yellow blooms from Africa, a host of colors from Colombia planted in the native soil. Flowers bloom all year long along the equator,
and a species without thorns from China. He chuckled then. I can't wait for you to see them all. Kyla blushed, or at least she hoped she blushed. She wrung her hands together, feigning nervousness, trying to react as Kiera would.
If you don't mind me asking,
she murmured in a shy, muted voice.
Why me?
She transferred her weight from foot to foot.
I mean, talk about making a girl feel special. A girl you picked up in a bar.
Something distant and undefinable flashed through Saxon's eyes, and Kyla's heart skipped a beat. Had she gone too far? He seemed to be thinking it over, and then he sighed, swept his hand through his hair, and angled his body to face her. He reached out and took her hand. She gulped, but held his eye contact.
You aren't just a girl I picked up in a bar, Kyla, he said softly. You're far more important than that.
He waved his arm in a gentle arc, indicating the greenhouse, the fantastical garden, and all its rare, amazing contents.
And yes, I built this for you. All of it.
Despite herself, Kyla shivered. Holy shit, he was being direct.
For me?
She whispered, pulling her hand back in hesitation. He nodded slowly.
Don't be afraid.
And there it was, a faint hint of compulsion laced within his voice. So he was going to take the plunge? Tell her everything? Kyla instinctively closed her eyes, wanting to hide from the moment. She needed to gather her courage, and remember her training, before diving feet first into such murky waters.
I built this for my destiny, he said.
And just like that, the secret was out. The vampire had spilled the beans.
You are not who you think you are, Kyla. And I am not an ordinary man.
The compulsion in his voice grew thicker, heavy, and she felt its effect like a gentle but insistent wave, cascading inside her head.
Come, walk with me. Look at your roses. There is so much I need to tell you, my love.
My love? Holy hell. She'd known he was a ladies' man from the moment they'd first met. His way was just too easy. His voice was just too alluring. His game was just too smooth. But this was something altogether different, direct, intense, and primordial. This was a vampire about to stake his claim on Kyla. And whether she was 100% prepared to go through with her devious plan or only 50% committed, feeling her way as she went, the shit was about to hit the fan. As they said in poker, she was pot committed now. There would be no backing out. Her eyes fluttered open, and she gazed at his strong, set jaw, noting his deep determination, his almost feral desire to bring her further into his world.
Okay,
she agreed, unable to respond in any other manner, if only because of the compulsion.
Show me your roses. My roses. I'm listening.
6. Later that morning, 9 o'clock. Xavier Matista paced along the banks of the Lycos River, on the other side of the portal, contemplating what was left of his beloved Mir after the Silivasi brothers had decimated the leadership, rescued their father Kitaro, and left the hierarchy in ruins. He was the only Alpha general left from the late King Tyrus Thane's original inner circle. Cain Armentieres, the Alpha general of the Northern Pack, was dead at the hands of Kitaro Silivasi, his heart ripped out of his chest in an act of blood vengeance for what he had done to Kitaro's wife Serena. Teague Verisace had been eviscerated with a scalpel, hacked up by Kagan in the ancient arena. Gavin Morrell, the Eastern Pack general, had been murdered by Marquise, and Ariel Nightsong, the human slave, had escaped all of their clutches, but not before aiding in the slaughter of their king, by fleeing to Dark Moon Vale as Kagan's beloved destiny. Xavier was the only original Alpha general left, and he had not forgotten the insult. No, he would never forget. Alas, he would finally have an opportunity to seek revenge on his enemies, the Vampyr. For nearly 9 long months, he had bided his time, taking over Tristan Hart's old position as regional headhunter for the Midwest Division, which included the Rocky Mountains and Denver. He had assumed responsibility for the Metropolitan Vampire Hunting Militia, and that included directing its shrewd, ruthless leader, Owen Green, and all the inferior human minions who came with him. It was beneath Xavier's dignity, and it was trite. A time suck at best, a pain in the ass at the least. But as long as he could travel back and forth to Earth and at least pretend to be doing something fruitful, it was better than doing nothing at all. Kitaro Silivasi and his blasted wizard son had saturated Dark Moon Vale with so many lichen wards and traps that it was untenable to even consider stalking the vampire-infested valley. And besides, the lichens hadn't rebuilt their numbers. They still weren't large enough or strong enough to stage a full-scale war of vengeance. At least Xavier could take comfort in the fact that the vampires would never again open the lichen portal, let alone utilizing a pretty wizard and a bumbling neophyte. It was fortified like the gates of hell, virtually impenetrable. In addition, Xavier was the first headhunter willing to share all the mystical secrets of the vampire with the piteous, desperate humans. To arm them with information, as knowledge, and knowledge alone was power. To give them the tools they required. The history of the Blood Moon. The purpose of the Destinies. The opposing warring houses. Who the Nosferatu were. Who they worshipped and where they had come from. How they lived. How they fought. And what it really took to kill one. As it stood, that information had been instrumental in the hands of a broken sociopathic woman named Kyla. She had been ready, willing, and able when dumb luck had lined up with preparation, and Xavier intended to make full use of her ingenuity. He flashed back to his last memory of Kitaro and Mir, and reflexively ground his teeth. Xavier had been patrolling the grounds at the slave encampment, around 7 o'clock at night, when he'd passed by Kitaro's tent and thought he'd heard voices, a conversation taking place inside. He'd stuck his head inside the tent, and the ancient master warrior had met his intrusion with a snarl, his face a mask of virulent hatred.
"Who are you speaking with, vampire?"
Xavier had asked, when there had been no one with the slave in the tent.
"Unchain me and let's talk it over,"
Kitaro had spat back, always so cocky and insolent. Xavier had raised his clenched fist and held it in the air in a defiant, threatening manner. Every bone in his lichen body had wanted to shift and gorge on the impertinent asshole's heart, but he had chosen sarcasm instead. King Tyrus Thane would not have taken lightly to losing one of his most prized possessions, the vampire who could fight like a demon in the arena.
"Haven't you had enough pain for one day, slave?"
Xavier had snarled at the captive, emphasizing the last word with contempt. It hadn't fazed Kitaro.
"You've been torturing me for centuries, you useless bastard. I don't even notice it anymore."
At that, Xavier had laughed. Oh, on the contrary, Kitaro had felt his pain, whether he'd been too proud to acknowledge it or not. King Thane had made sure of it.
"You're lying, vampire,"
Xavier had countered.
"And you're inferior, Lycan,"
Kitaro had replied.
"So now we both know where we stand."
"You're inferior, Lycan." That insult still rankled. Kitaro had goaded Xavier then, telling him to do something about it or get out of his tent, and by all the generals in King Thane's service, Xavier had almost been willing to forfeit his life, just to shut the vampire up. He had spat on the slave instead, storming out of the tent in a fury. But even now, 8 months and 27 days later, the memory of that night still haunted Xavier. If he had only followed his instincts, his king and his fellow generals would still be alive, and Kitaro would not be living, safe and sound, in Dark Moon Vale. Kitaro would not have proven his insult to be true. Indeed, the vampires had proven themselves superior, at least for a time. At least for one battle. But the war wasn't over. Not by a long shot. Xavier had never forgotten the offense. And now, his recall and his rage would serve him well, as he dissected the human destiny and learned about her blood. Was there any way to reproduce it? As he manipulated her wicked sister Kyla and tried to gain a foothold in the vampire's realm, could she possibly get to Kitaro or to one of the Silavasi brothers' sons. He reveled in the inevitability that at least one son of Jaden would die by a Lycan's hands, if only indirectly. Saxon Olaru would not survive this blood moon. Xavier would use Kyla like a kamikaze pilot, directing her to kill, even if it cost her her life, and he would murder Kitaro himself if he had to. As he donned a pair of blue jeans, a casual form-fitting shirt, and brushed his long, thick, wavy hair behind his shoulders, preparing to go back through the portal, he smiled and steeled his resolve. It was time to meet his waiting captive.
7.
Kiera Sparrow stirred in a stiff, high-backed chair beside the bed in her warehouse prison. Travis had untied her, at least from the bed, just as Owen had requested, but he had quickly bound her legs and her torso to the hard, unforgiving chair instead. And that was the first time she had seen her left inner wrist. Holy hell! What the devil was wrong with these bastards? They had tattooed some intricate, archaic design, probably something occultist, deep into her flesh. And the longer she stared at it, the more she'd turned it over and studied it from every potential angle, the more it had begun to resemble an astrological sign. Cetus, one of the original 48 Greek constellations. The memory had come back to her in a flash, something she'd learned and then forgotten in her college astronomy class. So what did that make them? Some sort of coven of devil worshippers obsessed with the ancient Greek pantheon? She couldn't afford to think about it, not now, not until she was free. Maybe she could one day have the emblem removed, but until then she needed to focus on where she was, on what was happening, on the fact that she had spent a long, restless night, devoid of sleep, strapped to a high-backed chair, reflecting on her state of captivity, and how to win her freedom. If such a thing were possible, the air in the loft suddenly grew dense, heavy, thick, and alive with electricity. As the door from the elevator slid open and a beast of a man sauntered in, Kiera craned her neck to see him, and then she winced in fear. Who the hell was this? Travis had returned to his own private residence, somewhere in lower downtown from what she'd overheard. The warehouse abode clearly belonged to Owen, and Kiera hadn't expected to see anyone but him, at least not for a couple more days. Boy, had she been wrong. The giant who stepped off that elevator was at least 6 feet 6 inches tall, his body made of solid heavy granite, and his hair, if a human being could don a lion's mane, rough, wiry, and unruly, then that was what it was. The shoulder-length tresses were deep golden brown, interspersed with various black tendrils, and as he approached the back bedroom in that silent, stealthy prowl, Kiera caught a glimpse of his eyes. Pale amber irises, rimmed in circles of onyx black. Where the hell were his white sclera? He didn't have any. She gulped and watched him come closer. His muscles bunched and contracted with every lithe step, and there was a harsh, arrogant quality to his gait. His mouth was cruel, almost brutal, and he was humming a harsh, dissonant tune. Holy Mother of Mercy! His entire countenance was jarring. Kiera began to tremble, and then she noticed his fisted right hand. He was carrying a new violin case in his massive palm, no doubt the updated instrument she'd requested from Owen. She shivered and glued her eyes to his as he slowly approached her chair. He stopped and licked his lips, a canine swipe of the tongue. "Kiera," he drawled lazily, setting the violin down. "So this is a celestial chosen destiny." She blinked several times. "What?" She didn't dare ask. She didn't dare speak as he loomed like a medieval bell tower above her. Some part of her recognized that Owen was now in the room. He had entered from the conjoining bathroom, but her eyes were transfixed on the terrifying beast. He placed his hand on her cheek, and his skin was rough to the touch. "I am Xavier Matista, your new master and your god. We are going to be spending a great deal of time together, Kiera Sparrow." He raised his hand and drew a thin straight line down her chin, along the length of her neck and slowly between her breasts, His spooky eyes alighted with salacious intent. Kiera regurgitated in her mouth, clamping down on the bile to keep it from spewing out. She had been frightened before, unsure of her fate, but at this particular moment, she almost wished for death. She could not spend time with this monster.
"What do you want from me?"
she whispered, her voice faintly shaking. She was trying her best to be strong. He smiled then, and the satirical visage was crueler than his words.
"Oh, everything you can imagine. All that I ask. Whatever I envision."
He grabbed her left forearm, traced the odd Greek tattoo, and then pressed his nail into the bend above her elbow, right above her vein, where he pricked it, making it bleed. And then he stared at the droplets of blood like he was gazing at liquid gold.
"I intend to discover exactly who you are."
She tried to retract her arm, to pull it out of his reach, but her binds were too tight to give.
"Please,"
she whimpered, hating herself for her weakness.
"Please don't."
He released her arm, took a generous step back, and glanced at the violin case.
"I have a thing for music, Miss Sparrow."
He smirked.
"I just happen to be tone-deaf myself."
He chortled, as if any of this were funny.
"But if you are as good as I've heard, then you may be able to buy your next breath, one note, one private concert at a time. Life is tedious," he added. "And what must be done, must be done. But there's no reason we cannot make it enjoyable, no?"
Was that really a serious question? Surely he didn't expect her to answer. Kiera glanced at the long mahogany violin case and shuddered. She could never play under these conditions.
"Untie her," the evil bastard barked at Owen. "I want to hear her play."
Kiera shook her head furiously.
"I can't,"
she croaked, failing to provide any further explanation.
"I just can't."
At that, the huge man's eyes grew 10 shades darker, and his lips turned up in a snarl. And God help her, because her eyes had to be playing tricks on her, but it looked like his canines sharpened. Kiera stiffened her spine. This was all about survival, nothing more, nothing less. If this brute of a man wanted to hear her play, and if dragging out the music kept his hands and his eyes and his teeth to himself, then Kiera needed to get a grip, and right away. She had not been able to formulate a plan to escape Owen, at least not yet. But as long as there was life, there was hope. And what had the monster said? "You may be able to buy your next breath." As the ropes fell away, Kiera pumped her fists, trying to get her circulation flowing. With laser-like focus, she padded to the case on the floor and slowly stooped to open it. The violin had been polished, it had a new bridge, and the bow had been re-haired as requested. Thumbing through the various compartments, she withdrew the shoulder rest and the rosin, tightened the bow, affixed the former to the back of the instrument, and gave the bow a few passes with the latter. Then she stood on shaky legs, took a few steps backward, and nestled the lower bout beneath her chin, her left hand falling effortlessly into position as she cradled the neck. She was so tentative. She wasn't sure if she could do this. Nonetheless, she drew the bow over each of the strings, starting with the D string, and much to her surprise, the instrument was still in tune. The luthier must have tuned it when he added the Eva Perazzi gold springs. She sighed, grateful for one less task that she wasn't sure she could perform under such harsh scrutiny. Frankly, she didn't know if Xavier had the patience to wait, or understood enough about the instrument to allow her to tune it. And then she willed her mind to be quiet, and tried to come up with a song. Something brilliant, something difficult, a caprice or a complex fugue, something that would impress her kidnapper. As the fingers of her right hand fell into a natural perfect position, resting lightly around the frog, she set the hairs on the E string, preparing for a downward stroke, and took one final deep breath. And then the oddest calm swept over her. Her soul expanded with a deep, otherworldly knowing, and all thoughts left her mind. There was nothing but Kiera and the instrument. The bow rocked subtly from the E string to the D string, without any conscious consideration, and her arm began to move, her left hand accompanying fluidly, as the most poignant, languid music she had ever managed to play resounded like liquid sound from the instrument. As the melody grew wings and soared, filling the spacious warehouse with light and angst and manna straight from heaven, she swayed to the unexpected tune she had somehow unconsciously chosen. Song from a Secret Garden. 8. It was about 10:30 in the morning when Kyla stood outside on the gorgeous cliffside balcony, recalling the night's events, taking in the breathtaking panoramic view and trying to solidify her resolve. The smell of pine cones was thick in the air, fluffy white clouds hung low in the sky, and a pair of deer, a doe and a fawn, scampered beneath the terrace. It was a distracting juxtaposition to Kyla's solemn mission. Saxon had told her everything. The fact he was a vampire. The history of the curse. What it meant to be his destiny and what was coming next. He hadn't spared a single detail, and she had struggled to react appropriately. To show the proper amount of fear and dread. To register surprise and concern. To ask question after question about facts she already knew. While Saxon led her through it with infinite patience and candor. And yes, with a vampire's territorial instincts. He had never posed it as a threat or crowded her in any way. But he had at last taken her cell phone, and made it crystal clear in his tone and his words. From that moment forward, he had no intentions of letting Kyla go. Not ever. She was truly in this until the bitter end. Eventually, the darkness of night had waned into the first light of morning, and Kyla had needed her sleep. Apparently, Saxon could stay up for 24 hours if he chose. And he had led her to his bedroom. But like the gentleman he was, he had made no attempt to touch her, at least not sexually. He had given her a pillow and one of his shirts, covered her in a soft, downy blanket, and quietly shut off the light, retreating to a guest room across the hall. He had left her in silence to think. And think she had. About how to play things off, how to earn back her cell phone, how to orchestrate circumstances to get closer to Kitaro Silavasi and his clan, Nathaniel Marquise, Nakari, Kagan, and their children. She knew she would have to go through the women, and she would need her phone, and more information to accomplish that task. And now, as she stood on the patio, contemplating how to move forward, she had the strangest, uncomfortable sensation, a curse of being born a twin. Despite her razor-sharp focus and her steely determination to remain in a cocoon of her own, she felt something so visceral and alarming, it could only be coming from Kiera. Anxiety. Terror. Abject intimidation. And the sound of haunting music. Kiera was playing her violin, and she was playing it for someone. And for some odd reason, that absolutely turned her stomach. What had Owen and Travis done with her? And why? Before Kyla could contemplate that further, she heard the patio door slide open and a pair of steady, agile footfalls amble across the platform.
Sleep well.
Saxon's deep, satiny voice pierced the silence. As if they were lifelong lovers, he sidled up behind her, placed his hands firmly on her hips, and gently tugged her backward against his rock-hard chest. And then he bent to her neck and pressed his perfect lips against her skin, tasting her as much as he kissed her.
How are you, my love?
Kyla shivered.
You don't love me yet,
she replied with defiance, a bit taken aback by his forwardness. She heard the iron in his voice.
No, not yet. But my devotion is the same. Did you sleep well?
Kyla shook her head. There was no point in lying, and she didn't want to rouse his suspicion. She needed to earn his trust.
Not really,
she replied.
Just off and on.
He placed his hands on her shoulders and massaged them, but he didn't reply with words. Finally, after several minutes had passed, he stretched his back and rolled his head on his shoulders.
You must be hungry. Come inside. Eat. We have forever to talk.
She gulped and recited an internal quote from Napoleon Bonaparte. Courage isn't having the strength to go on. It is going on when you don't have strength.
Saxon?
She whispered.
Hmm?
He intoned.
Do you remember what I told you in Denver, when we were standing in the alcove? About my dreams and that strange feeling I had? Like I already knew you?
I do, he said softly.
I'm not afraid of you. I mean, I am, but I know I don't need to be. I really do know that. And I know it seems soon, because you told me everything last night. But I've had a lot of time to think.
And?
He encouraged, waiting patiently for her to answer.
And I know what I want, at least for now.
Saxon rotated both palms, upward and outward, in an unconscious gesture of openness, and his deep, emotive voice sent shivers along her skin.
Go on.
I want to wait as long as possible. You know, before we worry about the blood moon, the conversion or the pregnancy.
She practically stuttered the last word as she shifted her weight nervously from foot to foot, and there was nothing pretend about her anxiety. Her body could not withstand conversion. He would kill her if he tried. And as for pregnancy, not only had she had a hysterectomy, but she wasn't compatible with his species. She wasn't Saxon's true destiny. Whatever she was planning, she had to get it done, before they tried.
I just,
she continued.
I want to get to know you first. I want to learn more about your world. I want to meet your friends, other warriors, other women. And I want to wait until the very last week because, well, just because.
He encircled her torso with his arms and spoke directly in her ear.
Because?
Because as hard as it might be to believe, I'm really old-fashioned at heart. I can't. I'd rather not sleep with you until I'm ready, until we're together and committed, and that's going to take some time. I just need to get to know you, Saxon. I need some time to adjust. And during that time, I need you to give me my space. Not to use any powers of compulsion. Not to try and read my mind, just try to meet me halfway. And I swear, I won't betray you. If you'll try to trust me, I'll try to trust you. I just need to move forward at my own cautious pace.
She held her breath and waited, and when he didn't reply, she persisted.
Saxon?
He caressed her cheek with his thumb, and he remained deathly quiet. Oh, shit, she thought. Maybe she didn't have as much control as she'd hoped. Maybe he wasn't quite as accommodating as he seemed.
Saxon?
The word came out as a tenuous query. His voice was eerily calm, maybe too calm.
My love, he whispered. We never spoke about my specific powers. Using compulsion or mind reading. We never talked about the things I can do. How did you know I could do either one? And would that concern you?
Kyla gulped, and then she spun around to face him, her face feeling hot and flushed.
I just assumed.
She tried to force her emotion into a blush.
Too many Count Dracula movies?
She croaked. His lips turned up in a smile, but it was half-hearted at best.
Perhaps,
he murmured. She worried her bottom lip. Oh, shit. What had she done? Despite her resolve and her confidence, her legs began to tremble. This male could end her life in an instant. If he suspected something not on the up and up, he could pull the truth right out of her cerebral cortex.
Shh.
Saxon crooned, noticing her trembling.
You need not fear me, Kyla. I am not going to harm you.
She took a slow, deep breath and tried to nod.
Saxon, did I just make you angry? I'm trying too hard, and I just get caught up.
She paused to catch her breath, covered her face with her hands, and did her best to manufacture real tears.
"It's just, I'm only human, and you're not. You're so much more. More powerful, more intimidating, more insightful. And I know that you could, I guess I just imagined it."
Saxon grasped her by both wrists, lowered her hands from her face, and cupped her jaw in his hands.
"Listen," he said softly. "I'm not going to lie. You strike me sometimes as truly odd. You're very accepting, very methodical, and trying desperately to remain in charge. I get that. And in time, I will get you too. But for now, this moment, I want you to understand. You are both under my care and under my command, Kyla. Vampires are primal creatures. We are dominant, territorial, and very protective. And being such, I will always take care of your heart. But I will also see to my duty. And I, not you, will control this blood moon. I will not jeopardize my safety or skirt my obligations to appease you."
When she started to sway, he righted her and continued.
"I will absolutely take every word you have spoken into consideration, and I will do my best to please you, because your contentment pleases me. But I will not make promises I cannot keep. Not right now. Not this early. Do you understand, my love?"
There was a faint, feral growl in his throat. Kyla recoiled in shock. So Saxon Olaru had a backbone after all. He would not be that easily manipulated. She took several steps back and scanned the deck, her gaze shifting from right to left, as if she had a mind to run.
"What are you going to do?"
she whimpered. Saxon sighed, took both of her hands in his, and gently kissed the tips of her fingers. For the first time since she'd met him, he almost looked exasperated.
"I'm going to take you inside and feed you, get you something to drink. We're going to discuss the possibility of having some of your clothes and personal belongings brought to Dark Moon Vale. Purchase anything else you might want or need right now, and then we're going to sit and talk. Surely you have more questions."
His stern jaw relaxed into a smile, and he brushed the pad of his forefinger over her quivering top lip.
"Surely you have more requests. I'd like to entertain them all. Please, don't be afraid of me, Kyla. We'll figure this out together."
Kyla grew as still as a leaf floating on the surface of a quiet pond as she let Saxon's words sink in. And for the first time in years, she felt a kinship with her sister. They were both in over their heads. Saxon Olaru followed Kyla inside, kicking himself for not being more accommodating. What the hell was wrong with him? Why had he responded like that? Especially when she was being so accepting, so easygoing, so eager to comply, even if she wanted to do so on her own terms and at her own pace. Why had her reasonable requests and inquisitive words stirred such an instinctive response in his gut? Celestial gods, if this kept up, he might have to speak with Napoleon. At the least, he might have to consult his brothers. There was just something about Kyla Sparrow, something about his destiny, something that rubbed Saxon the wrong way. And it didn't make any sense. He owed her everything. He was honor-bound to not only protect her, but to please her, to love her, to cherish her, to make her feel at home and at least somewhat in control of her fate. He would have to try much harder. He watched her as she made her way toward the kitchen, shuffling quietly like she felt lost. Maybe he had just waited so long. Perhaps he had imagined too much. His destiny was beautiful. She was smart, and she was here. She was his. Saxon could do better, and he would.
9.
Christina Riley Sulavasi pulled her sleek pink Corvette into the pebbled gravel driveway of Nakari's brownstone, grateful that there wasn't any snow on the roads and she was able to take her baby for a spin. She had cut out of work early that morning and was eager to get to the mall. She needed a pair of azure blue ankle boots, with a 3-inch heel to be exact. Nothing else would do. Her favorite form-fitting pencil skirt had hung in the closet for 2 long months, a cross between steel blue and gray, and she was eager to dust it off and take it for a spin. Only it was winter. The hemline fell above the knee, and none of her current pumps worked with the uniquely colored fabric. Since Braden Bratianu had proven himself to be a tireless warrior in the mall, good-natured, endlessly patient, and willing to cart her packages, she was hoping he would tag along. She bit her bottom lip and sighed as she climbed out of the driver's seat and gently shut the door behind her. It was February 14th, the human holiday, Valentine's Day. Not something the House of Jaden celebrated, but it could still pose a problem. Braden was always looking for any excuse to plant a kiss on her cheek, or, gods forbid, her lips, to wrap his arms around her. Those strong, muscular arms that were beginning to look like a Viking's. She quickly repressed the thought. Although he would turn 17 on May 10th, Braden was only 16 years old. Jailbait. At least outside the House of Jaden. And Christina? Well, she would be turning 30 in June. 30. That practically made her a cougar. Yet and still, due to the wisdom or wicked sense of humor of Napoleon Mondragon, the vampire king, she and Braden were betrothed. She laughed at the stupid, antiquated word, betrothed. They were informally engaged, required to one day be mated, destined to one day knock boots. She shoved her hand over her mouth and giggled. What a wicked thought. But she just couldn't help it. The average bear might not understand, but vampires matured much faster than humans. Even if Braden was occasionally plagued with immature antics, his Nosferatu genes were definitely showing. His voice was masculine satin, his chest and his biceps were titanium, and he was developing that telltale swagger that only a vampire had, a sexy allure that practically dripped from his pores. Christina had no idea when it had happened, but God's help her, if he continued to mature at this rate, she was going to end up as putty in his persistent, strong, rugged hands. One sidelong glance from those burnt sienna eyes, and she just might melt into a puddle. She cringed at the thought. Good Lord. She was 4 months away from being a cougar. Gross. Thank goodness she would no longer age like a human. She would forever appear 28, the age she had been when Marquise had converted her. She sidled up to the door of the brownstone and leaned against the frame, rapping on the panel 3 times. Braden would recognize her knock. About 30 seconds passed before the door swung open, and the kid flashed her a wicked, devious smile. "Happy Valentine's Day, Red," he drawled, looking as mischievous as a Cheshire cat. Christina rolled her eyes and raised her finger, placing it between their mouths before he could swoop in for a kiss.
"Don't,"
she warned him.
"Just don't."
He responded with gentle laughter, and the sound was like music. And then he held up both hands in defeat. "So you didn't come by to declare your endless love. What's up then, baby?"
"Christina," she corrected. "What's up then, Christina?"
"What's up then, Red?" She smiled. She was warming up to the term.
"I need a pair of azure blue ankle boots, and I saw the perfect suede ensemble at the Silverton Creek Mall a few weeks back."
She glanced over her shoulder, eyeing her Corvette.
"Feel up to a little shopping?"
He fell into an easy stance. "What about your sapphire platforms?" She turned up her lip in disgust.
"Trust me, they clash."
"Your cobalt blue spikes. The ones with the ankle straps?"
"Oh, no, they're even worse. Besides, it's winter. My feet will get wet."
Braden appeared to think it over. "So just go with the knee-high ultramarine leathers, then." He held up both hands in question, as if to say, no duh. This time, Christina huffed and placed her hands on her hips, causing a lock of her loosely coiled S-curls to fall into her eyes. Braden didn't miss a beat. He reached out instinctively and tucked it behind her ear, the backs of his fingers brushing her slender shoulder.
"What are they for, the shoes?"
he asked innocently, obviously needing more information. She flicked her wrist toward her feet in mock demonstration.
"My form-fitting pencil skirt, the blue and gray."
Braden's eyes narrowed in concentration. Then he nodded.
"Oh, yeah, you're right. None of your shoes will work, unless you go with black."
Christina glared at him then, utterly appalled. He placed the palm of his hand against his left temple, shut his eyes for the merest of seconds, then flashed her a welcoming smile.
"Got it. Just let me grab my coat."
She chuckled beneath her breath. Braden was definitely developing his own sense of style. As vampires could maintain their body temperature at will, he didn't really need a jacket. Nonetheless, he liked to look stylish, and he was getting pretty good at it, a whole lot better than he used to be.
"No problem,"
she said, twirling her keys while she waited. In less than a minute, he was heading out the door in a worn leather bomber jacket that matched the shade of his jeans.
"Damn,"
Christina whispered beneath her breath. "That jacket definitely worked." As they started toward her car, he furrowed his brows and shook his head, losing some of the natural rhythm in his developing easy gait. Christina eyed him sideways.
"You okay, Bray?"
He shrugged his shoulders and held out his palm.
"You gonna let me drive?"
Christina appraised her pink coach lovingly and gave him an evil smirk.
"Hell no. Never, ever, ever. Not unless we're taking your Mustang."
She waited for his reply. He walked to the passenger door, shuttle-stepped sideways, then braced one hand on the panel.
"That's cool. You can drive."
Christina rounded the car in an instant, leaned against the door, and placed both hands firmly on Braden's chest. There was nothing flirtatious about it.
"Okay, that's the third time. Braden, what is wrong?"
Vampires did not get sick, and he was acting like something was hurting. He tried to conceal his frown. Or was that a grimace?
"Psychic headache,"
he teased in a lackadaisical tone.
"Yeah, because our kind really gets headaches,"
she snipped. She pushed him aside, opened the door, and gestured toward the seat. The moment he folded into the leather, she squatted down in front of him.
"You getting that House of Jaden thing?"
she asked, lowering her voice. No need to aggravate the headache. He nodded. Christina bit her lip.
"In your head or your gut or both?"
Braden's eyelids drooped like they were heavy.
"It's all in my head."
Christina nodded. Ever since